We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. On today's program, we offer you Escape and Country of the Blind, written by H.G. Wells. But first, it's the Jack Benny program with special guest star Ed Sullivan. The Jack Benny program featured one of the finest casts ever assembled for a comedy series. Jack performed over four decades with many of the same supporting players and scriptwriters, largely because Benny always allowed his supporting cast to shine and because, contrary to his on-air persona, he was quite the generous employer. On today's program, we'll turn back the clock to 1939 and a special guest appearance by Ed Sullivan. Now, at the time, Ed Sullivan was a syndicated newspaper columnist who, in fact, hosted one of radio's earliest celebrity interview programs and was one of the first to introduce Jack to New York listeners in 1932. On today's program, entitled Is Jack Really Jack?, Ed Sullivan investigates Fred Allen's claim that Jack's real name is Maxwell Stroud, and Kenny Baker sings Deep Purple. Here then, from March of 1939, the Jack Benny program with special guest star Ed Sullivan here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton, Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Jericho, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you our master of ceremonies, that suave comedian and sophisticated humorist, Maxwell Stroud.
Now, wait a minute, Don. I refuse to accept that introduction. No matter what Fred Allen says, I'm not Maxwell Stroud. I'll change it immediately.
Okay. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this being the first week of spring, we bring you that quince on the fruit tree of life, Jack Benny.
That's better. Anyway, hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, thanks very much for that royal introduction. It was awfully nice of you to call me a prince.
Oh, don't mention it.
I'll see you later. But you're right, Don. Spring is here. Flowers are blooming. Trees are budding. It's getting warmer every day.
It sure is. Oh, by the way, Jack, have you taken your long underwear off yet?
No, I always unveil in April. But you know, Don, this spring weather has done my cold a world of good. I tell you, it's simply marvelous to be living here in sunny Los Angeles. Yes, sir.
Sunny? Why, Jack, there hasn't been any sun here in over 2 weeks.
Of course not. It's gone to San Francisco for the fair. But it'll be back. I am looking much better, though, don't you think?
Oh, you certainly are. And incidentally, How's Carmichael, your polar bear?
Oh, he's fine, Don. Getting along swell now. You know, I've been taking him out for long walks nearly every day.
You and the bear?
Oh, sure. And you know, Don, I was so embarrassed yesterday. So we were strolling down Hollywood Boulevard, and all of a sudden, Carmichael pulled out a tin cup. Oh, I don't know where he got it.
Not much you don't.
Phil, I was talking to Don. But as long as you're here, I want to thank you for taking my place on the program last week when I was sick in bed.
That's all right, Jack. Say, those jokes of mine were pretty hot, weren't they?
Hot? They were warmed over, if that was it. Hot. You got the next line, Phil. Go ahead. What are you waiting for?
You just ain't modern, that's all.
Modern? What a combination. Corny and illiterate. Hmm? Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello. Say, Jack, I saw you and your polar bear on the boulevard yesterday. Boy, what a crowd you had around you.
Yes, we were quite a sensation, weren't we?
Yeah, but I thought you were overdoing it with your violin.
Now, Mary, don't jump at conclusion. It just so happens that I was taking my violin to the repair shop.
Sounded all right to me.
Now, Mary, don't make up things. You know very well I was not playing that violin.
And why was the bear dancing?
Because the pavement was hot and keep still. Gee whiz, the way you're questioning me, you think I didn't have an amusement license. Now, let's forget it.
What territory are you working next week?
Westlake Park. Will you be there? We start out with a program about spring, and here we are in Westlake Park.
Shall I unpack the lunch?
Now, stop this. Phil, I think you better play a number before the ants spoil our little picnic.
Okay.
Oh, no, you don't, Phil Harris. I just wrote a poem about spring, and you're all going to hear it.
Now, Mary, we're not going to listen to a lot of...
You are, too.
Oh, all right, get it over with. What's the title of your poem?
When it's springtime in the Rockies, I will throw some rocks at you.
Now, there's a sentimental thought. Go ahead, Mary.
Winter, you have gone away. Where you are, I cannot say. But spring is here, and birdies sing. Gee, I'm happy. Pling, pling, pling.
Pling, pling, pling. What's that for?
I'm playing a banjo.
Oh, I didn't see it. Continue.
I saw a robin not long ago making a nest of grass and snow.
Snow?
And then I saw an old blue jay building his nest in Jack's toupee.
Now, isn't that silly?
Yesterday, I spent 2 hours watching the bees among the flowers. Buzz, 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 they were making honey. And I got stung where it wasn't funny.
Well, it's your own fault.
All out, folks, it's the end of the line.
Well. That was very good, both of you. Now, Phil, if you'll put down your nail file, how about a number? what's it going to be?
I'm going to play a little ditty entitled, We Don't Know Where Mom Is, But We've Got Pop on Ice.
Ooh. Phil, now you pick up that baton and redeem yourself. We got pop on ice. Get Some Shut-Eye, played by Phil Harris. I don't know where Mom is, but we got Pop on Ice. Wow. Phil, no kidding. How can you possibly be so corny?
Corny? I resent that, Jack. I'm high class.
All right, then have it your way. You're cream of corn. Say, that was a fast one, eh, Mary?
Yeah, that was a stinger.
Well, I'm glad that's over with. I was a little worried about how you were going to read that. And now, folks... Now, folks, since our feature attraction this evening is rather long, I will start announcing it without further ado. Tonight, the Busy Benny Bumpkins will present a hotel mystery drama entitled...
Say, Jack, look at Kenny standing over there biting his nails.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Kenny.
Hello.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing's the matter with me, that's what.
Now, Kenny, I know there's something bothering you. What is it?
I'll suffer alone, thank you.
Kenny Baker, I don't want you coming in here with a long face. Now, what's wrong?
Did you ever buy a ticket on the Irish sweepstakes?
Yes.
Did you win?
No.
Well, put yes and no together and leave me alone.
Oh, so that's it. Listen, Kenny, everybody can't win. You bought a ticket, so what?
$2.50 shot to Dante's Inferno.
All right, all right. Don't be such a hard loser.
Look who's talking.
Quiet. Now, folks, getting back to our play, in our hotel mystery, I will play the part of the clerk. Or Clark, as they say in England.
Or Cluck, as they say in Waukegan.
Phil, have you so much money saved up that you can afford to ad-lib at random? If not, I would suggest less levity. Now, let's see. I'm going to be the clerk, and Mary, you're going to be the telephone operator.
Okay. Say, Jack, why don't you be the house detective?
Because I don't want to. I'm going to be the clerk.
Gee, two flat feet gone to waste.
Never mind that. Now, this murder mystery will go on immediately.
I'll never eat another Irish potato, believe me.
Kenny, will you forget about that sweepstake ticket? Now, folks, as I've been trying to say, this murder mystery will go on immediately after... Come in.
Pardon me, is this the Jell-O program?
Yes, it is. What can I... Well, of all people, Ed Sullivan. How are you, Ed?
I'm fine, Jack. How are you?
Well, well, this certainly is a pleasant surprise. Nice of you to drop in, Ed. We're doing a swell play tonight. You'll enjoy it.
Well, thanks, but to tell the truth, Jack, I really came up here for another reason.
Oh. Well, it's sure good to see you again. Say, Ed, I don't think you've ever met my gang. This is Mary Livingston, our leading lady.
How do you do, Miss Livingston?
Mary, this is Ed Sullivan. He writes a very famous newspaper column.
I never saw my name in it.
Mary. Don't mind her, Ed. She's a little blunt.
She's a little brat, too.
Yes. Yes. She is. Now, there are Don Wilson and Phil Harris. Harris is the one with the false eyelashes. Right there.
Oh, I know them both. Hiya, fellas.
Hiya, Ed.
And oh, yes, I want you to meet our young tenor, Kenny Baker. Kenny, this is Ed Sullivan.
Hello, Kenny.
Oh, an Irishman, huh? Give me my $2.50 back.
Kenny. Mr. Sullivan has nothing to do with the Irish sweepstakes. You see, Ed, he's a little upset because he didn't win.
Oh, come now, Kenny. I bought a ticket and I didn't win either.
Oh, a sucker, huh?
Kenny, I've had about enough from you. Now go over in the corner and lay down.
Jolly little troop you have here.
Yes. Well, Ed, we're just about to put on our little play, so sit down and make yourself comfortable.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I didn't come up here to watch your program. I'm here as a reporter.
Oh. Well, what's on your mind, Ed?
I want to get the lowdown on this Maxwell Stroud stuff. Now, what about it? Are you Jack Benny or Maxwell Stroud?
Ed, believe me, I'm Jack Benny. And until 2 weeks ago, I never even heard of Maxwell Stroud.
Well, last Wednesday night, Fred Allen had the real Jack Benny on his program, and a notary public from Waukegan approved it.
Now, wait a minute, Ed. You and I have been friends for a good many years. We started on our careers at the same time. We've palled around together from the bright lights of Broadway to the battle-scarred trenches of France.
I don't remember that.
Well, we've stuck together through thick and thin, you and I, the two of us. We've called each other buddy. Now, whom do you believe, me or the notary?
The notary, buddy.
Well, maybe I didn't build it up enough. But look, Ed, regardless of what Alan said, you know that my name has always been Jack Benny.
Well, you could have changed it, you know. Take my case, for instance. My name wasn't always Sullivan.
Oh, no? What was it?
Hooligan.
Hooligan?
Yes, Edward H. Hooligan.
Oh, what's the H for?
Happy.
Mary. Now, look, Ed, don't pay any attention to Alan. I'm the real Jack Benny, and you can tell your readers tomorrow that I'm not Maxwell Stroud.
Well, let me ask you something. What about that ring you're wearing?
What about it?
What does that MS stand for?
Mostly silver.
It does not. That MS on my ring stands for Master of Ceremonies.
Master of Ceremonies? Ceremonies begins with a C.
In Russian? Well, I got this ring in Moscow when I was playing Rasputin's Rivoli. I went over very big. Now, Ed, will you please sit down and watch our play?
Oh, no. I'm here for a story, and I'm going to get it.
Say, why don't you run out and get drunk like reporters do in the movies?
Don't evade the issue. Fred Allen has definite proof that you're an imposter. You're not Jack Benny.
I'm not, eh? Well, you call up Mansell Talcott, the mayor of Waukegan. He'll tell you. Why, he planted a great big elm tree in the public square in my honor. Call him up.
I tried to, but he wouldn't come down out of the tree.
Oh, is he up there again? Ever since he visited Hollywood, he thinks he's Tarzan. Now, we got a long play to do tonight, Ed, and I haven't time to discuss this any longer.
All right, Mr. Benny, or Stroud, or whatever your name is. I'll go, but I'll be back and get to the bottom of this, or my name ain't Edward Happy Hooligan Sullivan. Goodbye.
Goodbye. What a prying Prunella.
If I were you, Jack, I'd have punched him right in the nose.
Now, Mary, how could I hit a man wearing glasses?
He wasn't wearing glasses.
Well, I am. And now, folks, our hotel mystery will go on immediately after Kenny Baker's song. Go ahead, Kenny.
How can I sing when my money lies over the ocean?
Sing, Kenny. I've had enough for one day. And where's my cigar?
When the deep purple falls over sleepy garden walls, and the stars begin to flicker in the sky, through the mist of a memory, you wander back to me, breathing my name. Now the sun is sinking low, and twilight steals across the darkening sky. As I loved you long ago, so now my love betrays me with a sigh. Love, come to me again. Come to my arms forever. Like the stars fade with the dawn, so I awake and found you gone. Once again I hold you tight. Though you're gone, your love lives on when moonlight beams. And as long as my heart will beat, loved one will always meet here in my deep purple.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, for our play, that great hotel mystery entitled... Or... Now, the scene of our drama is the lobby of the Hotel Chafing Dish, located in the thriving little town of Sterno, Pennsylvania. It is a dark and stormy night. Outside, the wind is howling and whistling. Gazooks, what weather. It is 8 p.m., just 1 hour before the stroke of 9.
What happens then?
Nothing. Curtain. Music.
Good evening, Hotel Chafing Dish. Here's your party. Good evening. What's that, sir? Oh, that's terrible. You'll do no such thing.
What seems to be the trouble, Miss Lavance?
Mr. Ferncliffe in 503 wants to send some money down to pay his bill.
Money? What's wrong with that?
2 hours ago, he ordered some paper, green ink, and a picture of Lincoln.
Oh, is he doing that again? Last week, he gave me a $5 bill with baby snooks on it. Oh, well. What a night. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'd like a room, please.
Would you like a room with a bath, or do you want to follow the arrow? We have both.
It doesn't matter. I won't be here long.
I see. Front, take this gentleman's luggage up to 401.
Be careful of that alligator bag. It hasn't had lunch yet.
You know something? I think that guy is nuts.
Oh, tush, tush, Miss Lavance. He's all right. Well, sir, I hope you have a good night's rest. You look tired.
Yes, I had a tough day at Waterloo.
That three-cornered hat should have tipped me off. Yes?
Pardon me, but the folding bed in my room is stuck, and I can't get it down.
We'll take care of it, Mr. Baldome.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Good evening. Yes, Mr. Smith? What? There's a hippopotamus in your bathtub. Well, put your glasses on and apologize to your wife.
Mrs. Smith is a pretty big woman. Well, how do you do?
Hello. I'd like a room. I just got married.
Oh, a newlywed, eh? Where's your wife?
Outside. She's carrying the trunk.
Carrying the trunk? My goodness, is it heavy?
I think so. She never had bow legs before. Here she is. You can put it down now, Sophie.
Thanks, Waldemar. You're so considerate.
Say, you've got her trained early, haven't you?
Yeah.
You ought to see me balance a ball on my nose.
Balance a ball?
It's the only seal I ever saw with a rabbit coat.
Quiet, Miss Lavance. Now, what sort of a room would you folks like?
We want the bridal suit.
Suit? That's sweet, sweet.
Lay off of my wife, you measure.
I'm not flirting with your wife. As a matter of fact, I think she's very homely.
Well, that's more like it.
Front, take this happy couple up to suite 5B.
Let's hurry upstairs, honey. I don't want to miss the Lone Ranger.
Oh, I'm following that, too. Good night, kiddies.
Good night.
Hi-ho, Sugar!
Gee, they're a romantic couple.
Good evening, Hotel Chafing Dish. Yes, 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 yes.
Who are you saying yes to?
My darling daughter.
Oh, how is Joni?
Pardon me, but the folding bed in my room is still stuck, and I can't get it down.
I'll get to it as soon as possible, Mr. Baldome.
Please do. Goodbye.
Charming fellow. Well, more business.
Good evening. I'd like to get a room.
Yes, sir. What's your name, please?
Bill Harris.
Oh, you better have baggage, brother. No stalling. Now, where are your bags?
Under my eyes, straight man.
Don't be so smart and get out of here. We have no room.
Okay, I'll sleep at the Wilshire Bowl.
What a show-off. Well, here comes Junior Wilson, the little devil. Hello, Donald.
Hello.
Now, Donald, a little boy like you should be in bed this hour of night. Don't you want to grow up to be a fine, strong man like your father?
That big tub.
Now, Junior, that isn't nice.
I don't care. I'm going to be a radio announcer. I want to tell everybody but Jell-O has six delicious flavors. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, women, and wine.
And don't forget the big red letters on the box. What do you got in your mouth? Now, go to bed. Good night, Junior.
Good night, Quinn's face.
Quinn's face, I had trouble with your father on that. You know, Miss Levance, that Junior is a cute little rascal. He's got big blue eyes, just like his mother.
Yes, but his chins belong to Daddy.
Daddy can take the rap for his stomach, too. Oh, well. Yes, sir, what can I do for you?
Have you any rooms available?
Why, certainly. Quite a bad storm, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Will you be staying long?
No, just for the night. I'm on my way to New York.
Oh. A little business trip?
Not exactly. You see, I'm on a mission of great importance, and I don't wish to discuss it.
Well, I didn't mean to pry into your affairs, Mr.
Stroud. Maxwell Stroud.
Maxwell Stroud?
Well, slap me down and call me grumpy.
Please, Miss Levance. You seem rather nervous, Mr. Stroud. What's wrong?
Can I trust you, young man?
Definitely.
Well, for 2 weeks now, a certain well-known radio comedian in New York City has been perpetrating a vile and vicious slander.
Yes?
He claims that a certain Jack Benny, whom he hates...
Yes, I know.
...is not Jack Benny at all.
Yes.
But really Maxwell Stroud.
But you are Maxwell Stroud.
Exactly. And when I get to New York, the whole world will know of the cheap trickery that's been foisted on the public by this nasal buffoon.
Well, I'm with you, Mr. Stroud. Here's the key to your room.
Thank you.
By the way, are you acquainted with Jack Benny?
No, but I understand he's revolting. Good night.
Good night. Well, Miss Levance, that's very important news we just heard.
I'll say it is.
Pardon me, but the folding bed in my room is still stuck, and I can't get it down.
Don't worry, Mr. Baldwin. We'll take care of it first thing in the morning.
I wish you would. My wife is in it.
Oh. Well, I'll attend to it at once. My, this is certainly a busy night.
Hey, you, did a fella check in here a few minutes ago by the name of Maxwell Stroud?
Yes, he did.
What room is he in?
313. Wait a minute, who are you?
I'm Ed Sullivan of the New York Daily News, the Pittsburgh Press, the Hollywood Citizen News, the Boston Traveler, the Philadelphia Ledger, the Omaha World Herald, the Denver Post, and the Chicago Tribune.
Did you hear those shots, Miss Levance?
Yes, they came from upstairs.
I suspected something like that. Follow me.
You don't think he'd go first, do you?
Oh, no. Come on, let's go. Good heavens. It's Maxwell Stroud. He's dead.
I thought so. Now we've got to find out who done it.
That's who did it. Fine newspaper man. But who in the world would want to kill Maxwell Stroud?
Look! Someone jumped through that window and he's running down the fire escape.
That must be the murderer. Did you get a good look at him, Happy?
No, I didn't.
Look, here's the derby hat on the floor. He must have dropped it.
Let me have that. Look at the initials inside of that hat. F-A.
F-A?
Yes. That proves the man who killed Maxwell Stroud was none other than...
Yipe!
He got me. Ooh.
Who shot you? Tell us who shot you.
Yes, who done it?
I told you before, that's who did it. I was shot by... I was on nuts.
Good night, everybody.
Jack Benny program is written by Bill Maher and Eddie Beloy. Peter Lind Hayes and Bill Orr, who appeared on our program, are cadets here at Santa Ana. The presentation of the broadcast from the Army Air Base at Santa Ana is for the enjoyment of the officers and personnel and does not constitute an endorsement of our product by the War Department.
There you have it, Jack Benny and special guest star Ed Sullivan. In a moment, we offer you Escape and Country of the Blind by H.G. Wells. More from the golden age of radio as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Escape aired from July of 1947 through September of 1954, and during its seven-year run was heard in 18 different time slots. Escape was radio's ultimate thrill ride and alternated between classic adventure stories and science fiction. Escape originated from the Los Angeles studios of CBS Radio and featured such broadcast legends as William Conrad, Gunsmoke's Matt Dillon, Paul Frees, later the voice of Boris Badenov on television's Rocky and Bullwinkle, Lou Krugman, and Wilms Herbert. Today's program from June of 1948 is entitled The Country of the Blind, written by H.G. Wells, the same author of War of the Worlds. Paul Frees stars as Nunez, Barry Kroger as Father Ibarra, and Peggy Weber as Medina Sarate. William Conrad is the mountaineer and voice of Escape. You are trapped in a remote valley in the Andes, walled in by sheer rock crevices, and surrounding you, closing in on you, a band of blind men who want your eyes. The Country of the Blind, next on Escape from Yesteryear.
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. You are trapped in a remote valley in the Andes, walled in by sheer rock precipices, and surrounding you, closing in on you, is a band of blind men who want your eyes. Tonight, we escape to the mountains of Ecuador and to a remarkable world where sight is unknown, as H.G. Wells imagined it in his gripping story, The Country of the Blind.
My name is Ibarra. I'm a mining engineer in Quito, Ecuador, high in the towering Andes. Up until a year ago, my chief sport was mountain climbing. My last climb was an attempt to scale the remote and forbidding peak of Parascotopetl, a 20,000-foot crag unconquered by man. It is unconquered still. 3,000 feet from the icy summit, we turned back and fled for our lives. All of us escaped, except one, a guide named Nunez, who slipped over the frightful precipice and disappeared in the vast chasm, yawning 10,000 feet beneath us. The horror of that man's fall has terrorized my dreams for a year. Because of it, I've forsaken mountain climbing for the rest of my life. And that decision still stands, even though today I've seen Nunez. He was sitting on the steps at my shack when I arrived at the mine this morning. First, I didn't recognize him. He was so much changed. I thought he was some weird, ragged beggar.
Is it you, Senor Ibarra?
My name is Ibarra, yes. What do you want?
You do not know me, Senor.
No? Well, you look like a man I knew once, but he's...
He is dead. Dead on the slopes of Parascotopetl.
Nunez. Oh, no, it couldn't be.
Nunez, that is my name, Senor. At least that is the name I remember.
But you fell. I saw you fall.
Yes.
But it's impossible that you could have lived.
Perhaps the gods of the mountain had some reason to spare me.
Nunez, if we'd had any idea that you were alive, but you went down thousands of feet. We couldn't even attempt to find your body.
I know. I do not blame you. You could not have reached me, and if you had, I should not have welcomed you at first. But then, later...
Yes, what do you mean?
Senor, you will not believe what I have to tell.
I can hardly believe that I'm seeing you, Nunez, and talking to you.
You remember that night, the night I fell?
Yes.
We had been toiling all day, inching our way up a steep ice wall, and as darkness came, we found a narrow ledge, barely 3 feet wide.
It's not very wide, but we can get our shelter wall up. Cut off some of this wind.
Well, that will be welcome.
Yes, but first we'll rest a moment.
Oh, look at that icy devil up there, glistening in the moonlight.
Yes. There's another 3,000 feet of sheer ice wall. We'll have to cut our own holes from now on.
Won't even be ledges like this for resting places.
Well, I can see why no one's ever made it. Do you think we should go on?
I don't know. Nunes, what do you think?
It is not my place to say, senor. I was hired to go to the top. I agreed.
But what do you really think?
If I believed in the gods of the mountain as the Indians do, I should be frightened now.
Why?
Because we have invaded the Forbidden Circle. This part of the Andes is unmapped and almost unknown, senor. It is an easy thing to believe strange things in this white loneliness.
Some of the legends are fascinating. I've heard of one, something about a hidden valley called the Country of the Blind.
Yes. See? It is supposed to be somewhere down there, below us. A fertile valley which was settled many centuries ago and then cut off by the great landslide of Arauca.
Yes, but why the Country of the Blind?
Even before it was cut off, the people developed a strange illness. All of them slowly went blind. And after that, their children were born blind. The legend is that the valley was the home of the mountain gods. It was too beautiful for human eyes.
It's odd. But then, of course, it's all nonsense.
Yes. Yes, of course.
It would be pleasant to find it, though. You know the old proverb, in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
I doubt if we should ever find it. I even doubt if it exists.
Of course not. I was only joking.
Yes. Now, if you're rested, we'll make the shelter wall.
Righto. I'll give you a hand in a moment. Believe me, Ibarra, for 2 pesos, I'd give up this climb. I never realized.
Senor! Nunes! Nunes!
I fell perhaps 1,000 feet, and then I felt the heavy, stinging impact of snow. I'd fallen onto an almost perpendicular slope, and once again I was sliding down, down, tumbling over and over. But now, under me, around me, over me, an immense avalanche of snow was rumbling, sliding with me. Suddenly, I realized that my own motion had almost stopped, and it was the snow that was moving. I was riding the avalanche. And at almost the same moment, I went over the second precipice. It was higher than the first, much higher, perhaps 4,000 feet. I fell with the snow for what seemed minutes every second, expecting the terrible final impact. But the impact never came. Miracle of miracles, that sheer wall blended almost imperceptibly into another steep slope, and again I was sliding. And gradually, as the arc of the slope curved away, I felt myself slow down. I was whirled along on top of the avalanche, and then, as it subsided out onto the gentler snow upon a gentler slope, and finally, I rolled to a stop and lay still. When I awoke, it was morning, and I was covered with snow. I shook off the cold, white blanket rolled over on my back and looked up. My heart almost stopped as I saw from where I'd fallen. The mountain towered 8,000-10,000 feet above me. Carefully, I felt myself. My clothes were torn. I was bruised and bleeding. I ached in every muscle, but I had not a single broken bone. I lay there and offered up a prayer to the gods of the mountain. Far below me lay a lush valley sparkling in the morning sunlight. I could see the stately trees and green meadows fresh with dew. I started down, but it was still an arduous descent. The farther down I got, the more I realized the beauty of the scene. Why, this was a hidden paradise I'd fallen into, and I was the first man ever to see it. So I thought, but I was wrong. I realized at first when I saw the cultivation in the meadows and then the walks. Well-kept stone walks laid in a symmetrical pattern all over the valley. And then I saw them. There were men and women lying under the trees, resting. Nearby, a collection of windowless huts marked a village, and the plastering of the houses was done in a wild variety of colors. I thought to myself, the plasterer who did that must have been blind as a bat. Then I saw the 2 men who were quite close to me. They were standing on a bridge over the little stream. They were dressed in odd, loose clothing, and there was a strange look about their faces. They failed to notice me as I approached until I shouted, and suddenly they looked up attentively in my direction. I waved wildly at them, but they took no notice. Why, the fools must be blind. Blind? Could it be I'd fallen into the legendary country of the blind? In the country of the blind, a one-eyed man is king.
Hello there.
Is a man or a spirit come down from the rocks?
Oh, I'm a man, all right, just like you, but I've had a miraculous escape, and now I find myself here in your valley.
Valley? Valley?
Come hither. Let me feel of you.
Certainly, here, my arm, my face. You see, I'm indeed a man like yourself. My lips move with speech. You feel... Oh, careful there. Gently on the eyes.
Eyes?
That is strange. Feel this, Correa.
Yes, I feel.
Careful, you feel the eyelids flutter?
He is but imperfectly formed. Some strange bulge there. Unseemly.
No, your eyes are shrunken in, but mine are whole. I can see.
See? Pedro, he's a strange wild one. Where does he come from?
Down out of the rock.
No, from over the mountains, out of the country beyond there, where men can see. From Bogota, where there are 100,000 people and the city stretches out of sight.
Sight? What strange words he uses, without meaning. And feel the coarseness of his hair, like a llama's.
Ugh. And you have come into the world.
Into? What? No, out of the world. The big world beyond the mountains. The world that stretches 12 days' journey to the sea.
Our fathers have told us, men may be made by forces of nature. It is the warmth of things, and moisture, and rottenness.
Let us lead him to the elders.
You don't have to lead me. I can see.
See?
Yes, of course. I didn't see your water bucket.
His senses are still imperfect. He stumbles and talks meaningless words. Lead him by the hand.
But look, I... Oh, well, all right. These people had been blind for centuries. They'd forgotten even the words associated with seeing, and they thought I was an idiot, only half-formed. Especially when they led me into the pitch blackness of one of their windowless huts, and I stumbled over someone.
Oh, a thousand pardons, Medina Sarote. He is a clumsy one.
I'm sorry, I fell down. I couldn't see in the darkness.
Who is this, and what is he saying?
He is but newly formed. He has come down from the rocks. He stumbles as he walks and mingles words that mean nothing with his speech.
He is a wild man out of the rocks.
No, I come from Bogota, over the mountains.
You hear? Bogota. He uses wild words. His mind is hardly formed. He has only the beginnings of speech.
Bogota.
Yes. I come from the great world where men have eyes and see.
That must be his name, Bogota.
He stumbled twice as we came thither.
He must be taught.
No. Don't you understand? I can see, but not in the dark. To you, darkness or light is all the same. But to me, to us outside in the world, beyond the mountains...
Mountains?
What are mountains?
Oh, very well. Then beyond the rocks.
There is nothing beyond the rocks. That is the end of the world.
But surely you must realize the sky above covers
sky
more than this
above,
valley.
There is nothing above but the roof of rock. He is very raw, my children. He shall have to be taught from the beginning. Take him away. Feed him. But guide him. See that he does not stumble over my daughter again.
Do not fear, Father. I shall guide him myself and feed him.
Very well.
Come, take my hand.
Thank you. It'll be a pleasure to get outside again, out of this darkness.
Come this way.
Yes. What is your name?
Medina Sarote.
Medina Sarote. Mine is Juan Nunez, and... Oh, sunlight. Oh, this is better. And now, Senorita, you're beautiful. I cannot tell what a wonderful thing you are to see.
Please, I'm afraid for you.
Afraid?
Yes. If you do not learn quickly and cease speaking such strange words, they may not be so kind to you. They might be angry. They might even destroy you.
This thought had not occurred to me before, and suddenly I had a twinge of fear. Still, the proverb kept running through my mind. In the country of the blind, a one-eyed man is king. But try as I would, I could not make them understand my wonderful gift of sight. They simply could not comprehend it. Worse, they were not impressed. They thought me stupid and untaught, almost an idiot. Day by day, I learned their peaceful ways, but they could not learn mine. It was getting on my nerves, and theirs too, perhaps.
Bogota. Bogota, come hither. Bogota, you move not.
No, and I won't, you old beetle. I'll show you. I'll leave the path.
Bogota, trample not on the grass. It's not allowed.
How did you know I stepped on the grass?
I heard, of course.
Heard, but I didn't make a sound.
Why do you not come when I call you? Can you not hear the path as you walk?
I can see it.
There is no such word as see. Cease this folly. Follow the sound of my feet.
Oh, my time will come.
You will learn. There is much to learn in the world.
Has no one ever told you in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king?
Blind? What is blind?
Oh, never mind. Go on.
Bogota, I must warn you. Just keep quiet and learn. And stop this nonsense about seeing.
Nonsense, is it? I'll show you. I've taken enough of your insults. Unformed mind, got no sense. I'll be king here. I can see and I'll be king.
Bogota, stop it.
No, I'm through with your orders. I'll show you what an advantage sight can be. I can hit you, hurt you. And you can't see me to strike back.
Bogota, put down that spade.
You devil, your ears are sharp, aren't they? But it won't do you any good now. I'll show you. I'll strike. No, I can't do it. I cannot hit a blind man.
Bogota, pick up that spade. Do not leave it lying on the walk. Someone might stumble.
Pick it up yourself.
Do as I say.
Take your hands off me. Take them off.
Bogota! Bogota! Stop!
I finally lost my temper and shoved him over and ran. The next half hour was a nightmare. Before I reached the fields, they were following me, 20 or more of them, armed with sticks and spades fanning out across the meadows, following my trail like bloodhounds. At first, I wanted to laugh, but on they came, swift, inexorable, and the laugh froze in my throat. They didn't need eyes. They could smell me, feel my trail. On they came, closer and closer, encircling me, closing in.
Bogota! Bogota, there must be no violence. You must come peacefully.
By heaven, I'll hit you if you come any closer. I swear I will.
Bogota.
You don't understand. You are blind. I can see. I can see.
Grab him.
I'll hurt you. I swear I will. Leave me alone. I hit his arm, turned, and ran over the wall outside the valley back to the rocks, to the precipitous cliff I'd come down. But when I reached that sheer rock wall, I knew there was no place to go. For 2 days and nights, I stayed outside the valley, hungry and cold, and then I realized the hopelessness of my position. I was trapped. I must spend the rest of my life here. There was no way out. So I went back. I confess I was mad. I admit I was only newly formed.
That is better. And do you still think you can see?
No. No, that was folly. The word means nothing, less than nothing.
And what means overhead?
Rock is the overhead. There is a roof above the world, a roof of rock, and very smooth.
Very well. Now.
Before you ask me any more, please, give me food or I shall die.
Very well. Give him food.
I shall.
And after that, give him the most menial tasks in the village. Guard him well, and perhaps he shall learn yet.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, that is better. You are kind, Medina Sirote. Very kind.
I am glad you came back.
You are? If they were all like you, I should never have run away.
What was that word you said I was?
Beautiful.
It means something nice.
Oh, something very nice. Medina Sirote, why is it you have no husband?
I have a disfigurement. These long hairs.
Your eyelashes. Oh, but they're beautiful.
They're considered a disfigurement.
Oh, you're the most lovely girl in the valley, but they wouldn't know, would they? And so you have no lover.
No.
Medina Sirote, what do you think of me? Do you think of me as an idiot like all the rest?
No, no. You have much to learn, but you will learn it, I'm sure. You are kind and gentle. Your voice is soft. You speak the words that are soft and warm. No one has ever spoken such words to me.
Then I shall speak them often, Medina Sirote. You are the only one in this valley, in this world, that I care for. And so it began. I, the village idiot, the slave boy who dreamed to be king, I, with my eyes still whole, fell in love with Medina Sarote, the daughter of the elder of the village. Only to her could I open my heart without fear, and only to her could I speak of the beauty I could see around me. It is a beautiful valley, green with grass and yellow with sunlight, and flowers, bright flowers dotting the hills. And in the cool of night, the stars gleam like diamonds in the sky.
Oh, words sound lovely. But what are stars?
Stars? Why, they are... But no. No, you wouldn't understand.
And what do you mean, in the cool of the night? You still get that confused one. The night is warm, the day is cool.
No. No, it is you here who have them backwards. Because the darkness means nothing to you. You work in the cool of night and sleep in the heat of day.
You are teasing me.
Oh, no, no. I'm... Oh, what does it matter? All that matters is you. You here beside me. Medina Sarote, I love you.
I love you.
I know they still think me an idiot, but you listen to what I say, and you don't think me an idiot, do you?
No. No, I like to hear you speak.
Then, will you... Would you marry me?
I would be very happy.
No, I will not have it.
But, Father...
He's an idiot. He has delusions. He cannot do anything right.
But he's getting better. He's better than he was. He is strong and kind. Stronger and kinder than anyone in the world. And he loves me. And I love him.
No, I will not have it.
Great sire, if you please.
Yes? What is it, good doctor?
I have examined Bogota, and the case is clear to me. I think very probably he might be cured.
Uh-huh. And how might that be done?
His brain is affected by something. I believe I know what it is. Those queer things he calls eyes. Where we have but an agreeable depression, he has great lumps. Consequently, his brain is in a constant state of irritation.
But what can be done to cure him?
Oh, it's a very simple surgical operation. Remove the cause of the irritation. We will merely cut out his eyes.
But they say it will make you well.
But you don't understand, Medina Sarote. My world is sight. You would not want me to lose my most valued possession.
I do not know.
There are so many beautiful things to see. The flowers, the far sky with its drifting clouds, the sunset, the stars, you. Why, just to see you, it is good to have sight. And I would never see you again.
I wish sometimes you would not talk like that.
Like what?
I know it. It's your imagination. I love it. But now...
Now? You want me to... Oh, Medina Sarote. If I were to consent to this...
Oh, if you would. If only you would.
What else can I do?
Oh, my dearest one. My dearest with a tender voice. I will repay you.
Oh, Medina.
Be brave. Carry my voice in your thoughts. Now I must go. And tomorrow...
Yes?
Tomorrow will be forever.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Medina. I suppose I knew it then, when I said that. I only meant to go up on the rocks and look out over the valley, to spend my last day feasting my eyes on the wonderful, beautiful world of light and color. But when I got there, it was too beautiful, too lovely, this valley, this home of the mountain gods. Beautiful and forbidden. I drank it in, the green of the fields, the blue of the gently curving stream, the orange of the lichen in the rocky crevices. I climbed higher to see the great snow-capped peaks towering above and away to the distant sky. And higher still, as the shadows turned the snow to purple and crimson and deep blue. The valley was far below now, and as beautiful as a painting. But like a painting, it looked unreal. Medina Sarote was small and far away, a distant dream. And the world of sight was here, all around me, overpowering, wonderful. I turned and began to climb up that sheer rock wall. How many months it took me to make my way out over those mountains, over glaciers and snowfields and sheer precipices, I cannot guess. How I lived through the cold and hunger of it, I cannot tell you. But I'm here at last, back from the country of the blind.
Good heavens, man. What an experience.
Terrible and wonderful.
You aren't sorry you came back?
Sorry? I see your face clearly now. It is the only thing I see.
Nunez, come, you need food. Here, take my hand.
Thank you. Where is it, Senor Ibar?
Nunez, you are?
Yes. The god of the mountains has had this revenge. Those months of crawling over the snow and ice with the sun glaring down. Yes, I am blind.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman McDonald, and tonight brought you The Country of the Blind by H.G. Wells, and Byron Kane is Pedro. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Escape with Country of the Blind from 1948. That draws to a close this edition of Yesteryear. Back with you again next week at this time. We invite you and your friends to listen and enjoy the best of the golden age of radio right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly.
KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.